from? And where are we going?
Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren, and this is our internet talk radio show, recorded from the west coast of Sweden. You can tune in every Thursday and Sunday for our regular program. And do take advantage of our subscriber section if you want to have full access to our archive of radio shows. You'll find all the information on how to subscribe and be a part of Red Ice Creations on our website, redicecreations.com. And this is the third Thursday of June, and that means that we have our regular monthly guest, Michael Tesserion, with us. MichaelTesserion.com, OriginsAndOracles.com, and Taroscopes.com are the website that you should check out right away if you are new to Michael and his work. And today we are going to spend some time talking about sorcery and magic. So, what is magic? Is it mind over matter, or matter over mind? Is it having control over others? Is it having control over yourself? Is it being in harmony with what is? Or is it anything which impacts you on all levels at once, energetically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually? And Michael, in almost in all your DVDs, presentations, and writings, there is a central theme of the conflict between sorcery and magic. And today maybe we can dive deeper into this. It seems that you mention a lot that the world is under influence of some very powerful sorcerers, either if it's through the subversive use of symbolism, through the media. We have brainwashing and mind control techniques. We have cults and fashions, or even pharmacopoeia, right?
Right, right. And thank you for having me on again and covering this particular theme, as you say, because it is a big theme in my work. I've long wanted to really get into it in greater depth. I don't think it's something that people are too familiar with, because again, you know, people tend to have a very false understanding, especially of what magic is meant to be, the way that magic has been portrayed in books and the movies and so on. And it's, you know, it's not so good to always break things down to two simple components, I guess, but I'm a believer that most of the secrets of life are simple. You know, I mean, we know that politicians break things down simply, but that's because they don't want you to think. You know, I do want people to think, but I think it's accurate to break things down into polar opposites in this way. Life has been described as a great game of chess, you know, the conflicts that exist. And sorcery equals magic, or sorcery versus magic, is my particular way of categorizing, you know, the world's problems. I've always seen it that way. Mm. You know, I grew up, my mentors were people like George MacDonald, C.S. Lewis, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien, you know, who definitely helped me understand that you can divide the world into those categories.
Mm.
You know, of sorcery. Of course, when I mean sorcery, I mean a perversion of magic, a perversion of natural operations of the universe. But you know, we have to also connect it with what I've said so many times before, is that if there is such a thing, you know, as sorcery in the world, we have to sort of understand not that it exists, but how did it come into existence? Why is it there?
Mm. So in a way, this is about, we talked about this earlier, this is an expression, if we were to compare sorcery versus magic, or the differences between them. We talked a little bit about the inauthentic life, and of course the ego, and how recent that is, and so forth, and even the loss of self. And I guess you would attribute this more to the sorcery aspect of the problem, or how we should view it, than the magical aspect of it. And why not dive into talking a little bit more about sorcery right away, and kind of define what that is and how it works and so forth.
Well, sure, and you know, you hit the nail on the head, because again, if something exists in our world, it's good to know that it exists, but why does it exist? You know, you have to be also under sorcery. You know, somebody can be manipulating you, but you also have to be susceptible to that manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my job is not really to pull down the sorcerers from their ivory towers, you know, in that type of, you know, let's storm the ivory tower situation. Mm-hmm. It's more about letting people wake up themselves. The sorcerers are put out of business the moment that you cease to be under their sorcery.
Mm.
You know, my mind goes back to the very, very, very fantastic scene in the movie Conan the Barbarian. I wish people would actually go and watch that movie with educated eyes, in which the anti-hero, Of course, anti-heroes are always very interesting people. He's describing to Conan, the protagonist, how much power he has, and that it's not the power of the sword or the steel, you know, particularly it's the power of the flesh or the hand that wields it.
Yeah.
And to demonstrate this, he literally calls one of their followers, who throws herself off the tower and jumps to her death, you know, when he beckons her. And then he turns to Conan and says, that is power, this is power. So, okay, you know, if you're a self, well, you ain't going to be jumping from no high tower. You're going to go, hey, mate, go stuff yourself. You go and jump. But if you're willingly, in whatever way, wanting to be manipulated, you can be led by the nose.
Yeah.
You'll see tiny little children, no more than 3 or 4 years of age, in India, leading these ginormous buffaloes, the size of which would almost astound you, enormous buffaloes, by the nose. A little 3-year-old kid with a stick, you know, can prod these along. You'll even see them prodding elephants along. So, you know, the size of the human race, anyone who studied, you know, secret societies know that the Albert Pikes and the Sidney Webbs of the world, they look at the whole world as one neck for one leash. They're not you know, dissuaded by numbers. Did it look to you that the Bolshevik, you know, government setup was worried that Russia was one of the largest countries in the world, or that there was so many people, how are we going to control them? Nothing could have been easier. They just use the right talismanic words, you know, and the crack the right size whip, and everything happens. So the sorcery is absolutely dependent on people being fragmented. And I've said it so many times, it's the fundamental key of my work, but, you know, it definitely bears repeating, is that how did that fragmentation come into existence? I believe that 13,000 years ago and down through the different millennia from then, there has been humongous, you know, changes in the world. Awful spectacles of devastation that have traumatized not only individuals but entire tribes. I've even gone to the length of saying that what we know to be consciousness, the human ego, as you were hinting there, is a very recent creation. Most people don't think about thought. Most people don't think about consciousness. They just think they have it every morning. They never even question what is thinking. They don't question, you know, here we are trying to affect the world and we don't even know what thought is. Well, you know, what is the anatomy of the ego? You can tell that a body is going to be defined by a torso, a head, the 2 arms and 2 legs, and a hand is defined by a palm and 5 fingers, or a species of butterfly. Everything has an anatomy, but consciousness has no anatomy? Of course it does. But what is that anatomy? What are the divisions and of consciousness? What is ego? My reading of it is that ego is a form of consciousness. It was created out of trauma. But it was created out of trauma, which means it's terribly weak. It's terribly fragmented. It has incredible capacities. It has unbelievable focus and strength in many ways, but it's also at its root very, very weak and very shaky. And therefore, a shaky edifice, anything that has inherent impotency, can be controlled, can be manipulated. Habitat can be influenced. An animal need not even know that its habitat is being influenced, but its behavior, its attitudes of life, its entire actions, waking actions, can be manipulated by the slow manipulation of its habitat outside its peripheral vision. A gorilla or ants or any kind of, you know, we accept that this happens in life when it comes to animals. How come we don't accept? Will the human race ever wake up? I wish that the human race could just get as far to accept a simple premise. And that there is environmental ambient control taking place that you're not aware of. Teaching, instruction happens one-to-one, right? You're manipulated in school. Well, there's your teacher. You can see the teacher. The parents instruct you as to how to do this, that, and the other. That's one-to-one. You know, the military boot camp major is going to tell you how it happens. You know, what you're going to do. This is in-your-face control, you know, signposts in the street. But we've got to realize that there's this other kind of control. And the human race needs to wake up to realize that these subtle forms of control and why they're also successful. So the weak ego, I believe, is, let's put it another way, the lack of selfhood. The lack of selfhood that has arisen is your responsibility. So yes, there's the responsibility of the sorcerer and those who think that they have the right to control your life. That's a huge problem in life. But I want to focus much more in my work on the fact that individuals are permitting this to happen by their, you know, their own weakness, their inner split, their inner division.
Yeah, their search for an external safety or an external component in reality that is more structured in a way, maybe?
The scaffolding. What happens to a rotten mansion when it's going to crumble down? You immediately got to prop it up.
Mm.
You know, we've talked before about those famous Salvador Dali paintings in which you see these big, you know, masks, the fleshy faces propped up on these little crutches, you know.
Yeah.
And we know that a person who's, you know, got problems with weak legs, you know, they'll put on the stabilizers and what have you. So man is itching psychologically for these stabilizers. That's what Dali was talking about, that man needs psychological braces. I want to take those braces off.
Mm.
You're not going to talk about any kind of social or constitutional freedom. You're not going to hammer it into existence legally or constitutionally if it's not inside a man internally.
Yeah. So there's a need for it also in a way.
And there's the need for the scaffolding. Is that what you mean? That there's a need for this bracing?
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, now the potential discovery of this and also the removal of it, that when people feel insecure and so forth, that this is obviously a good thing, you know.
But I want to see that insecurity. I'd much rather see the insecurity of a child who is learning the miracle of riding a bike when the stabilizers are taken off. As much trepidation and potential, you know, fear of danger. I'd rather see that because it's coupled with learning. It's coupled with the exhilaration of now being able to take the stabilizers off and have that fantastic experience of riding your bicycle at full pelt, you know. It's a sense of freedom.
Yeah.
I'd rather see that trepidation than the cowering trepidation of a scared, impotent, fragile, you know, schizophrenic individual cowering under the staircase of the mansion that belongs to them.
Mm.
Shivering in the corner of the palace that, you know, that they need to begin exploring, which is the palace of being, the palace of the self.
Mm.
You know, because the seventh wonder of the world and the first wonder of the world is the self. And every form of sorcery and every form of anti-magic, every Sauron, you know, every Saruman, every demonic politician or entity or priest or politician or pope or pharaoh who is hell-bent on the control of human minds wants to erase selfhood and is an artist, an artisan, a specialist, a technocrat, an absolute skilled artificer of the methods of entropy.
Mm.
There's not one, you see, knife that, you know, eviscerates selfhood. It's many. It's a machinery. It's a toolkit. It's 101 ways of doing it. And that's what this, you know, that's what my work has been all about, is that in some way try to address these tools in the same scientific way that anyone would want to do. If you're studying any particular thing, like a computer, you've got to only not study what the computer is, but what are the viruses that could attack those programs, you see? Because, you know, you may make a wonderful computer, the greatest programs in the world, you may creatively do that, but then you also have to defend it against those pathogens that could erase your work.
Mm. So we have obviously, you know, a physical immune system and so forth, but there is also a psychological immune system, I guess, then.
And that's the most important one of all. And it's the least taken care of.
Mm.
In fact, should a psychologist, it's within the realm of psychology that you find people who are the greatest warners, people who've tried to strengthen our immune system psychologically are basically psychologists with a few philosophers thrown in. Nobody wants to listen to them.
Mm.
They're considered cranks themselves. As soon as you start talking about selfhood, as soon as you start talking about psychological immunity or psychic sovereignty or psychic hygiene, as I like to put it, you're completely ignored.
Mm.
Artie Lang, Freud, the list goes on. They've not only chronically misinterpreted what these people have said, they've misinterpreted them, they've mistranslated them, and they have, they go up against the sorcerers. So the sorcerers want to diss these people as fast as possible.
Hmm.
And all sorts of negative labels, you see, will be put on them. Anyone, I don't care if it's a poet, I find that some of the greatest people who talk about selfhood and the strength of selfhood are from within the musical community.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's, to me as an astrologer, that's not a surprise because the planet, I don't want to get into it right now, but the whole planetary rulerships of music is very connected to the planet Pluto and great interchange. Psychological change is ruled by the planet Pluto, but Pluto is very akin to Uranus, the planet of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't want to get more long-winded about that or we take up the whole show, but... People who've watched the Future of Mankind web stream that we did, we went into that a little bit more. So from within the musical community, even dating back to the time of Paganini and you know, Liszt and certainly Beethoven jumps to mind, there's been this revolutionary spirit, very, very strong revolutionary spirit, I guess, even within Stravinsky, you know, and then up into the modern genre.
Mm.
So coming out of music, coming out of art, Because again, you know, what is art? What is music? It's stuff that strengthens your creativity.
Yeah, and it is creativity or an expression of your creativity.
Your selfhood. Yeah. This is because the creative person has an idea of self.
Mm.
So if people are wondering why there's not that much creativity around today, there's a reason. It's because it also has to go south because self is going south.
Mm.
Collectivism is in, individualism is out. But going back to the very important thing of the misnomers, the fallacies, the phony way that magic is presented to us as some sort of wand-waving thing, or that magic and sorcery is based on gaining power. You're a secret little Wicca cult, and you dabble and light candles and incense because you're secretly wanting sexual power or, you know, mundane power.
Yeah.
This has got to go. The magic and sorcery I'm talking about has nothing to do with that. In fact, sorcery specifically is not born out of egohood, but the opposite. It's born out of the selflessness again.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Star Wars. Darth Vader, as powerful a magician, a sorcerer as he is a puppet of the Emperor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Emperor is a puppet of the dark side of the Force. Saruman, Sauron, they don't even show in the book or the film Sauron. Sauron's an empty, all his legions, right?
Mm-hmm.
The orcs are faceless minions, aren't they?
Yeah.
Without individuality. His riders, the nine riders, the nine kings, are literally faceless ghosts. They're even known by the name of Wraith,
yeah,
which the second translation means nothing, an emptiness.
Hmm.
An emptiness. Thulsa Doom in Conan the Barbarian talks about the great emptiness.
Mm.
So people have to get this idea out of their mind that any kind of magic, you know, dark magic, dark sorcery is sort of an expression of my selfhood, my egohood.
Mm.
It's a lack of self.
Hmm.
So these George Bushes and Cheneys and Thatchers, you see, and all these people that I consider sorcerers who are in slavery to this form of sorcery are selfless.
Mm.
It's not, we've got it completely run the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, sure, a little tiny person can cast a big shadow, so we may be thinking the shadow's enormous. But the fact of the matter is that, no, these people have lost themselves. I think we spoke about this on another show, in which you can look at it in two ways. Either these people are possessed by dark sorcery, or that they've let go of their selfhood into the sorcery. They've immersed themselves in the ocean of nothingness, of that nirvanic, that obsession, that drive, you see. But either way, it is a selfless entity that deals in sorcery. The person who's of self would never ever deal in it because it deals in the manipulation of other people. And if you're a self, how would you want to do that? Didn't Socrates say to harm another is to harm oneself?
Yeah.
Crowley also spoke about that, if I hurt another, I awaken the pitch, right?
Yeah.
Every pitch awakens its similar pitch.
Speaking of Crowley, I mean, he spoke of course, you know, the will, or, you know, will under law. I don't know if that's correct.
Love under will.
Yeah, love under will, and that will is the most important thing, and will in a sense then is an expression of your individuality, that you have a strive for something or a wish or an ambition or a goal or even creativity, I guess.
Well, he spoke of a Greek concept, thelema, which is the Greek for will, and it just turned out, if I can remember correctly, that in Greek, the word for will and the word for love, I think, equal the same in numerology, they equal the same number or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he found this link. And when he was talking about will, of course, the phrase you're thinking about is do what thy wilt shall be the whole of the law.
Yeah, that's right, of course, yeah.
That's what it was. The word for law and the word for will were the same or something like that, the values.
Okay.
You know, he was working with occult principles there. And what he basically realized was it's not your individual will that is separate from the universal order. Your will must be brought into harmony with the universal order.
Mm-hmm,
that's what thelema really means. It's balance.
Okay.
But you see, it wasn't some sort of hippie-ite will in which you just did whatever the hell you felt like.
Mm.
It was a will that was also overseen by virtue. He was talking about morally superior beings, people who are virtuous. And as we said on other shows, virtue is not just the repetitive performance of good deeds, as you've been instructed, but your inner self is screaming inside, you know?
Yeah.
You know, virtue is born absolutely from within you. It's not just the performance of roles. So he was from within the roles. So yeah, there's different interpretations of the will. We will always hear the black propaganda from the sorcerers telling us that it's all about the will, it's all about me, the right of the individual, when in fact they're erasing that very thing. And of course they perform, these husks, these Saurons, these wizards of evil, they will perform as if they are strutting individualists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll give us the sense that, oh, the Pope, oh, you know, the President, what strong, mighty individuals they are riding their white horses, you know.
Yeah.
That's all fakery. These are husks.
People put in front of us and bow down, I guess, to the hierarchy or the system itself. And then if you go, you know, as you say, further up top all the time, you find a kind of a faceless character or a That's non-existent right. character.
Absolutely. There's a movie we talked about movies before, and I didn't really go into my own personal favorite films in one of our interviews, but certainly if people would watch the movie Zardoz with Sean Connery, this will be highly explained, that the further you go up the ladder, the more, in fact, they even verbally expound upon this within the movie, that when the hero of the movie actually finds the secret of life, he finds that it was, you know, behind a faceless, that God, in fact, was a faceless entity, you know, that it was just a mask. He had been led, you know, he had been led on a false journey, as the whole world is. And the fact of the... Yeah, again, the sorcery is interesting to me, but the response of those who are under the power of the sorcery is actually more interesting to me. Why the bowing? Why the genuflecting? Why the acceptance of this? And that, I've understood that completely. It's not a mystery to me. Yeah. As R.D. Lang said, insanity is a perfectly normal, you know, response to an insane environment or whatever.
Yeah.
I understand that the ego is incredibly fragile. The ego is born yesterday. It's extremely young. So it acts in exactly the same way as a teenager. Brilliant and scintillating, but highly neurotic and schizophrenic as well. So, you know, and just controlled by its drives, completely out of control in many ways. So once you understand that the ego has been repeatedly traumatized, then you understand how come it is then that even in historical time, the human race continues to be traumatized by those we're calling the sorcerers. In fact, it's a hallmark of sorcery. I can call these people, these politicians and leaders and religious potentates, sorcerers with absolute accuracy because they're defined by acts of terrorism on the earth. Because they know what we don't know. They know what I'm saying right now, and that is the human ego is traumatized. Its existence is born from trauma, from a primal trauma. What better way then to make sure that there's never any peace or ease, you see? Or luxury for the ego, to perpetually every 10 years or so repeatedly traumatize it again. Not every 10 years, it's happening every day. The news is enough to traumatize most people's psyche, you see?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So, but again, this application of sorcery is a hallmark. Those who start to study this criminal, again, you know, my mind goes to the movie Murder by Decree, where the fantastic statement there is, in the pursuit of criminals, one learns their devices. As he's swiping the Masonic ring from the finger of the head mason, right? very loaded statement there. But what he's really saying is that as you start to study the criminal, not just know that some sort of criminal exists out there, but to actually trail them, to start tracking them, to find out, like a hunter, how these people operate, what's their scent, what footmarks do they leave? Then you start to realize that they leave a trail of trauma behind them. They're always thinking about how to further traumatize you. And your civilization. So that keeps you, you know, susceptible to their control. This is one of the ways that they work.
Definitely. And we have, again, we can bring in the terrorism into this, of course, you know, governments performing, you know, terrorism against its own nation or, you know, its own people in a way to further, I guess, then, you know, traumatize the people so they can keep the structure or hierarchy within society and keeping people afraid and you know, I guess.
That's right. You know, keep the salad tossed all the time, you know, and we're living knee deep now in what I'm talking about. When I see times like have come upon us, you know, since, well, of course, depends how you look at it. From an American context, you know, from a world context, there's been nothing but trauma. History is nothing but a lexicon of trauma, you know, a catalog of it. But the most recent one that people will kind of go, oh, yeah, I recognize that, is the 9/11 thing. And that 9/11. 911 is the emergency, you know, I mean, it's incredible, emergency numbers on the phone.
Right there.
So we are in it. This is not just it happened in 2001. It has never stopped happening.
Yeah.
It is perpetual. And it's a formula that is repeated over and over again once you have the eyes to see it. And people who study, for instance, the Masonic structure, again, these people who've really, the hunters who've been on the scent, you know, have discovered the ordo ab chao concept, right?
Yeah.
Order out of chaos, better described as the dialectic. How on earth could a dialectic or this interplay of opposites ever work unless the mind itself was divided. Mm. See, these divisions don't exist in the world in themselves as much as they exist in consciousness. So when I talk about ego being split or ego being divided or fragmentary, one can simplify it by just thinking that the mind divided into two halves. Meaning the mind is inherently fractured. Just like you take a piece of quartz crystal and you smash it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fractured. There's nothing more you can never join those pieces together again. All that can now happen is there's some dialogue, you know, between those two aspects of the self.
Mm-hmm.
So man is in conflict within himself. And the sorcery is inside as it is outside. Because again, you know, there has to be a puppet in order to have strings.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So the puppet is also disjointed. And the mind itself is split and divided. You know, and this, you find these divisions in mythology as Christ and Satan. You see as Osiris and Set.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You find it in the Arthurian legends. You see between Tristan and Mark, or, you know, Arthur and Mordred, who's his own son. You see, so they're always showing you the connection. You find it in astrology and the famous oppositions of astrology. You find it in gender world as the masculine and feminine proclivities.
Mm-hmm.
You find it in philosophy as the karma and the dharma. For people who don't know what that is, it just means authentic and inauthentic lives. You know, dharma being authentic life, your vocation, as opposed to your role. Karma is nothing more than your role.
Okay. Yeah.
The confined role in which you conform your life, in which society, remember again, the braces.
Yeah.
For people who don't understand what the scaffolding is, you should know, because if you're in a role, that's the scaffolding. You're not a person. You're not a human being. You're a mother, a father, a daughter, a brother. You see? An uncle, a cousin, a lover, a wife, a husband. You know? You're one of the team. You're the center forward, or the, you know, you're the goalkeeper. You see? Or wasn't there that movie? What was that movie?
I think about The Guardian, or?
Yeah. People should watch the Kevin Costner movie, The Guardian. Or any other movie like that, Officer and a Gentleman, that show you that your role is, your function and your role is what matters, not you.
Yeah.
In fact, it's openly shown to you that the you is of no use to us. We're here to erase your you-ness. Leave that at the door, become the complete and utter role, and your function is what society wants from you, not your self-expression.
Yeah.
So Crowley called it Nuth and Hadith,
mm-hmm.
you know, meaning the opposites. The Maya, and the Aztec called it Nahual and the Tonal. William Blake referred to it as the prolific and the devouring, two aspects. Of course, in the East, they talk about the yin and the yang. You can see it in Freud, where he had his permissive and prohibitive aspects of the ego, making it more clear to Western people what that means. He also referred to it as Eros and Thanatos, meaning a life instinct and a death instinct. So again, you know, this is very, very important in psychology, that the mind has two drives that work against each other.
Yeah.
The life instinct and the death instinct. Biophilic and necrophilic. Necrophilia, what necrophilia really is a death instinct.
Yeah.
Physicists will know it as the centripetal and centrifugal, or centrifugal energies, pulling out and pulling towards, you see.
Oh, the atoms. And
The universe works in this way.
Mm.
In Buddhism, or not Buddhism, but Hinduism, they talk about the Satyam, which is reality, and the Asatyam, which is unreality, two principles. You're starting to hear it now coming out of the new age metaphysical world, where you have hierarchy versus holarchy. It's not really from the new age movement. It's actually from quantum science, where they really discovered that there's these two polarized worldviews.
Yeah.
Of course, most people will be familiar with the quantum theory about whether it's a pulse or a wave.
That's right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the beauty of all of that, you see, is centered in... The beauty of all of that is centered in, it's both given your perception. So see how the self comes into this?
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And it's affecting, you know, as in quantum physics, of course, that it's you, the observer, or the part of it that actually, influences, you know, depending on if it is a particle or is it a wave, and even where it is. I mean, it's you, or the individual that is looking upon it, that actually is the contributing force, you know, to influence it.
Exactly. What they found out, which of course they were hoping they would never find out, scientists claiming that they're objective, suddenly they've come right up against this subjective philosophy, and that you your looking, your existence, your function changes matter.
Yeah.
Reality.
That's amazing.
They didn't like that. They did not like that at all. Because science has always been priding itself on there is no subjective reality, it's all objective. You can come across objective truth.
And as a scientist, you always try to remove yourself, in a way, from the, you know, when you conduct the experiment or whatever, you know.
And then they find that there is no experiment without the you. Oh, my God. In fact, you are affecting the experiment. You know, mystics could have told them that. You know, the shamans, pre-logical shaman could have told them that.
Yeah.
You know, but this is what Heisenberg discovered. This is what ended up, you know, Schlesinger and all of them discovered, is that the very act of looking affects not only the atoms on the subatomic level. You know, an atom is 1/1,000,000th of an inch across.
Mm.
1/1,000,000th of an inch is an atom. And subatoms, which is what they were discovering at this point, are hundreds, thousands of times smaller than that.
Mm.
So from the smallest... But you see, it took science, it took man to go to the smallest components of matter to understand how consciousness is affecting reality.
Mm, that's interesting. Yeah.
It's just that we're up here in the macro level of reality, so it doesn't appear that your thoughts are affecting matter.
Mm.
But Crowley and the magicians all knew, of course it is.
Mm.
And magic may be, I'm not saying it is, but let's one interpretation of magic, of course, centers upon this ability to change matter.
Control matter,
And of course, in the New Age movement, they're always talking about prosperity think. You know, about the way you think changes reality. And I'm a big, you know, supporter of that belief. I absolutely do believe that. Always have believed that.
Your intention and what you focus upon and what you attract as
absolutely.
A human.
Absolutely. We just had a discussion on the forum recently about that, about, you know, who are these people telling us that we have, you know, no control over, you know, or Scientology or somebody telling us that, I can't remember exactly what it was, but they were all just hopeless victims.
Yeah.
You know, in the sea of the world.
Mm.
And unless we follow some beacon or some leader, you know, we're lost.
Yeah.
Total nonsense. I don't believe in that, you know. And so, you know, William Blake had said it before, when the doors of perception are cleansed, man sees things as they truly are, infinite.
Hmm.
But man can see things as they truly are, infinite, first of all, must be infinite in his consciousness. Man must first see himself in that way.
Mm.
So the sorcery is that which tries to prevent you from ever discovering your infinitude. If it can have you narrow, confined to roles, regimented, conformatized, just like the Guardian movie shows you.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, that's a religion with them. That's not something they're willing to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a choice. When you're working with the status quo in the system, you better conform to the role. Otherwise, you're a non-existent. They'll put you in the madhouse, they'll lock you up, or they'll leave you on the lower realm of the class system to end up in the streets. They're not going to argue about it. There's no humming and hawing. You either play the game and you buy into the role, or you will be a vagrant as far as society is concerned.
Yeah.
Look at the Guardian. You'll only get the girl, right, once you've got the uniform.
Mm.
You got the rank, you get the girl. You get promotion, you've got the girl. So, you know, at the end of even, that's one criticism of National Treasure, is at the end, he gets the car, he gets the mansion, and he gets the house after he got the gold, you know. So this Hollywood man is all very linear.
Yeah.
It's not getting psychologically advanced or spiritually enlightened or morally pure. It's getting the gold. It's getting material. It's getting the rank and the status. It's getting Big Brother's approval.
Yeah.
And once you get the pat on the back, you can take that big, deep breath, and everyone will applaud, you see, and the collective has accepted you now.
Mm.
Your role is established because you're not what they call inner-directed. You're outer-directed. You have no psychic sovereignty. So the approval of others, be it even one other, or the approval of the many, now matters extraordinarily.
Mm.
Your whole life and your whole sanity rests or falls on the approval of other people.
Yeah.
And since the reality is that you don't get approval from most people, that just happens to be a physical fact, well then, of course, now the neurosis begins. Because now you're so dependent on the approval of others, what happens if you don't get it? Well, then you end up with, like most people are walking around today.
You fall apart.
You fall apart.
Yeah.
Hmm. Whereas Ayn Rand, you know, one of my mentors, would have responded to that by going, if you are a person who's already of merit, why do you need to be decorated?
Mm.
If you have done something for another that is what you wanted to do and truly was of value in itself, you don't need their approval or their thanks.
Yeah.
Get sorry out of your vocabulary. Get thank you out of your vocabulary.
Mm.
If you know, if you did something that was for the right, it doesn't matter if another human being knows about it. It's the gift you've given yourself. If they say thank you, that's absolutely fantastic. That's their right. But you're not psychologically dependent
upon
them saying
on receiving that.
It's polite to say that in society or to respond, of course.
Mm.
These are normal or mercurial responses. There's no problem. But you're not neuroticized if I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, what is happening. So we have now got... this is all what we talked about in previous shows about the... the inauthentic life. These are the trappings of the inauthentic life. Once you're confined to these roles, this is where you're going to be at. And like we said, the yin and the yang, the pulse and the wave. The Greeks talked about the logos and sophia.
Mm-hmm.
Again, right brain, left brain.
Mm.
Power versus love.
Mm. Yeah.
My article, Weapons of Mass Deception Found, goes into the power versus love. Power is in the place of love, and love is in the place of power.
Mm.
So when you see a sorcerer, you see an addict of power.
Interesting.
That's it. Obsessed and addicted to power. Power is where love should be. And they want to infect you with their infection. As now the whole world is becoming infected.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler's no good without a gang.
Yeah.
Bush is no good without an audience. He has to have like psychopathic people around him, first of all to hide his own psychopathy.
Mm-hmm.
They're the tall grass in which the tiger hides, you see. And believe me, if you can have a whole culture of psychopaths, right, all the better.
Perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
The orcs, have all the orcs. Then you can be as faceless as you feel like.
So, if we talk about sorcery, do you think that it is invisible in a way? If this, sorcery that you talk about exists in that sense, how comes it works? Why don't people, oppose it or rebel against it? If it's there, is it?
Well, they're under infection. That's the first thing. And people like myself hopefully should be motivated to try and address people like a healer or whatever to the fact they're infected by these things. Remember, we talked about the fragility of the ego allows them to be so controlled and herded. I even go to the point of saying that we're not thinking with the mind, we're thinking for the mind.
Mm.
See, the mind is all about the collective.
Mm.
So even the ego you have is oriented or magnetized more to collectivism than it is to individualism. Individualism must be fought for. Sovereignty or hygiene must be gained.
Mm.
It doesn't come to you naturally. What comes to you naturally is dirt. If you leave fruit on the table, naturally it'll rot. If you leave your home, right, dust will gather. See, the natural function is for decrepitude and for dust and toxins to gather. Your effort is to get the gloves on, the detergent out, and the brushes and to clean.
Mm.
That takes effort.
Mm.
This is a work that the human race couldn't care less about anymore. So the toxins are building up. The human race has never cared for that. It's only a shamanic class that cares to, detoxify you and to work with hygiene, but they're all dead. So, in one way...
Do you think that, speaking about the ego, again, as a recent, how should I say, effect on the consequences around us then from trauma and so forth, are we also in a immature situation now that we actually are, is this process that we're going through now helping us in a way to actually get to know our ego and help to develop that and mature the ego in any way?
Yeah, you're talking about the fact that people are stressed within the inauthentic life?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, see, this is where I differ a lot from those people in other areas of this community, where I have no problem seeing all the harangue and the stress and the frustration and the sort of... I look at that as very positive because you shouldn't get comfortable with a lie.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see people burned out, stressed out, complaining, frustrated... I want to see those so-called darker emotions operating, because I know what those darker emotions are.
Mm-hmm.
Those darker emotions that you hate, you think is called hate and anger and loneliness, you see, and fear, those are just terms. Those are, again, words that you have blocked your higher self.
Mm-hmm.
The higher self is working overtime to wake you up from a delirium. You're caught within the roles. You're caught within that scaffolding. You're caught in the cage of the inauthentic life.
Mm-hmm.
You are miles away from your dharma and your inauthentic existence.
Mm-hmm.
You've had everyone from your parents to your peers to your fellow friends, so-called friends, teachers, politicians, and priests, and the whole world erase your individuality.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you're going to be screaming inside. I don't want to medicate you. I don't want to create a New Age cult where I can liberate you from your angst. I want to introduce you to your angst.
Mm.
That angst, right? What did Nietzsche say? Beware casting out your demons. You may be casting out the best part of you.
Yeah.
People think he was satanic, crazy.
Mm.
No, he was a philosopher who understood. Let's hope that, those dark forces that are banging on your door get in.
Mm. So you can root. It's a form of exorcism,
isn't it? It's a form of catharsis, an exorcism.
Yeah.
You may be so personally traumatized that when they come in you die from shock, well, too bad. That's the price we're willing to pay. But they're not killing you. You're killing yourself in fear of a shadow you don't understand. You, see, the unconscious always shines back the face that looks into it. That's why the greatest symbol of the unconscious is the mirror. Because the face that the unconscious takes on, or that's, they say more specifically, the face that the content of the unconscious takes on when it comes into consciousness, is predicated upon your own ego defenses. Meaning that what you look into is like this atomic level thing. The face that looks into the unconscious is reflected back. So if the face that's looking into the unconscious is fearful, pathological, toxic, scared, etc., the content will take on that shape.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Even looking exactly where, and we have come this far now in a way because of also the technological advancement through, you know, that we have the, you know, means now to look into that, that deep down into, you know, atoms and go so far into it.
And what are they going to see when they get there?
Themselves, yeah.
Now, remember, if people find this concept hard to deal with, they explored it in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, when they literally go in search of God. And when they get there, everybody sees a different God. Or the main hero in the show, the protagonist, doesn't see what he thought he saw. And luckily he wakes up to the point. He discovers that the God he's seeing is a projection of his own self. It's beautifully, you know, it's, that's why the movie is very positive, is because the person discovers his own insanity at that point. He realizes, oh my God, I created this myself. So we are doing that. So I am very much a person who looks at all of this social confusion, worldly confusion. I don't like to see people medicating themselves. I don't want people to run away from it. Well, I know why they're doing it. You see, people are already in an escape from the real. So people go, you know, we're providing escapes. The media provides escapes. No, no, you're already in escape. Your whole life is an escape from the real. So your medication, medicating yourself and finding escapes and finding deviations from this horrible cage that you're in is also natural. Of course you would want to escape from it. All I'm saying to people is to escape from it totally. Because remember, part of the sorcery, this is the theme of our show here, is that the sorcery is to keep you within the cage, but giving you the illusion that it's okay to be in the cage, because we'll offer you a bunch of false freedoms. What would you call it? The illusion of freedom. So, and they'll lay on anything. As long as the door remains locked. And you don't really ask for the key. Because they know that people will get frustrated sitting in a corner of the room or hiding under the balcony, you know, hiding under the staircase. So they, there's an incredible manufacture of stimuli for that person who does not believe that they are in control of their lives. And remember, you ask, why is this happening? It's because there's a certain kind of safety within the cage. Within that prison, there's a certain kind of, you know, safety and security. This is Patrick McGuinn points this out in his Prisoner series, you know, that people are very happy to be in there because everything's provided, everything's laid on.
No need to ask any questions, you know, you don't need to go off on a tangent and, you know, protest against evil governments or whatever. Everything you want to have is basically a little bit within your reach, is if it's a new car or, you know, PlayStation or, you know, whatever it might
Everything.
Be. You know.
Everything will be laid on. Everything from A to Z will be laid on. In the Prisoner series, they say questions are a burden and answers are prison for oneself. Don't think. Stop your, you know, we'll just make it pleasure, pain. Less work, more play. No, no, more, this era will be more play, less work, you know. So it's very cut down, very small. And those reward mechanisms, merit, remember in the Guardian movie, merit. Get that badge. You know, get that badge. Eviscerate your selfhood and get that award. And stop your own processes. Repress. And society suppresses you, but you repress yourself. And so when we talked about the divisions there, yin and yang, eros, logos, sophia, logos. There's also another one, which is repression, suppression. You repress yourself and society suppresses you. So there's another two forms, you see. And people get happy with this kind of regression and this conformity. And this kind of conformity is in everything you look at, from the cars now to the houses, the boxes people live in, the foods that they're given to eat, you know, even the so-called But I remember, and then there's these so-called escapes from it, which is the new cults, the new fashions that people think, oh, that's so much expression of my individuality. Okay, created by who? Benetton and Ralph Polo Lauren and... Tommy Hilfiger, they're going to create your image for you now?
Yeah.
And you're claiming to be an individual? Good God, what kind of delusion or poisoning are people under?
Yeah. So this is an art, it seems like, of the controllers, or the social engineers to, you know, to keep this cage of the inauthentic life, as we talked about, the illusion of freedom and all of that, but this is an art that has been, you know, I guess, developed over, you know, the, I don't know if we should say millennia or hundreds of years or whatever, to provide you with all the entertainments and things that you can escape into. But this art, as it were, do you think that also connects with the fact that, because we talked about this, about there is no need for the clampdown or the, you know, the total annihilation of the population or a hands-on we actually go to the lengths where you suppress the population through, you know, a military action or something like that, because we, in a way, I guess we live in the perfect society for the controllers now, because everything is in place to keep the to sustain the way we live now, right?
Yep. War on consciousness, perception control, perception management, opinion control. The real adroit war, and I'm not saying that people within the power hierarchy don't want to go out and just murder and kill. They've tried that in the past. But we're now in an era in which it's thought control.
Yeah.
It's consensus trance. It's perception management. So much more subtle, you know, forms of control. This is the art. And you're talking, yes, this art of manipulation, this art of... See, the sorcerers have to not only create the cage, create the inauthentic life, they have to sustain it and prolong it.
Mm.
Creating it is one thing, but you create something, somebody else can take it down 5 minutes later.
Mm.
So it's much more than just creating inauthentic life and all these roles and all of this, this religious stuff and that's going on in the world. They have to maintain it and update it. This is a whole thing to be continually revamped and made.
Expand it maybe into the areas that you potentially want to go into, or offer you, let's say that you have a need for something and a grassroots movement within society,
right.
And they can offer a counter solution to that, a revamp, as you say.
Inauthentic forms of freedom. We're talking about inauthentic life. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the cage of the inauthentic person. Well, can't they then invent an inauthentic version of freedom?
Yeah, definitely.
It's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people who've checked out the work of Edward Bernays, you know, and the whole manufacturing of consent and the engineering of consent and how you take people's inner desires, you see, and manipulate those.
Mm.
Because remember, if there, I've always said it from day one, if you find that there is something impeding a man's spiritual progress, it is often not his own desire that's the problem.
Mm.
There's obstacles in his way.
Mm.
You got to remove those obstacles. You don't have the choice to rehardwire the person. You can't instill what's not there.
Mm.
But you do have the right to remove the obstacles on the path in front of that person, or at least make them aware of those obstacles. But there's people who are putting obstacles in the way. They're creating this whole artifice, which is extremely elaborate. If people can just understand that it's very, very elaborate.
Mm.
And luckily, you know, people I relate with, you know, that talk on the forum or, you know, come to my talks, they are starting to become very aware of just how elaborate this sustenance and maintenance of the lie is.
Mm.
It's very, very, ambient.
Mm.
It takes many forms.
So how about, you know, other forms of, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, you know, we have New Age movements, we have yoga, all kinds of religions, things to dive into, I guess that's maybe not as alternatives, but as more escapism, I guess.
Yeah, well, once you've got this Frankensteinian, you know, desire to enlarge the prison and create all these wonderful new features, you know, more inauthentic forms to maintain and sustain this life of the roles. Coming, then of course, and I'm a believer, you see that a great deal of the New Ageism, I can hardly be a critic of religion and then leave out the New Age movement.
Yeah.
So to me, the New Age movement and certainly Orthodox religion are all part of this.
Mm.
They know that man is searching for meaning. So they create religion to falsely pretend to be giving you that.
Mm.
You know, the New Age movement is part of this, that again, man's craving to have a little bit more diversity, to know himself more. Oh yeah, so the non-self now desires to discover, see, you're in the role. You haven't budged from the role. You haven't budged a smegging inch from the role, but now you want to know what your true self is. Well, they'll manufacture that with all the guru wallahs and all the oriental, you know, mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
And with, again, elements of truth.
Of course.
Elements of truth, you know. Little spattering of truth here, a little bit of there. It's a 70-30. And then you have this whole Dr. Strangelove, you know, concoction, where, which is the perfect creation. And I definitely even put yoga into that. I don't see anything healthy in any of that, except what I would call is known as hatha yoga, which is sort of like exercises for the body. I'm okay with that, you know, a form of yoga. But I believe that yoga is really technology of the ego. Remember, we talked about the fragility of the ego. So the ego is always setting about trying to find some real way of cementing its own nature. The ego is in a million pieces. So one of its primal drives is to cement itself together. It happens in the dark behind our perception. But the ego is ever looking for that perfect cement to rebuild itself. It knows it's in pieces and it wants to get whole again. So what we know as Eastern mysticism, yoga, and I'm mentioning this very clearly because it's not the same as magic, which we're going to talk about later. Restructuring the ego, the fragmented ego, is not the role of magic. Right? It's another form of sorcery. It's another form of technology where something that is broken is now trying to be unbroken. But it doesn't question why it was broken in the first place. So yoga is a sort of super highway or super way of it's like weight training for the mind. Yoga is God, you know, we're weak, we're impotent, let's pump that muscle. Let's get into shape. So it's super toning, you know. That's what yoga is in its lower form. It's a technology of the ego. And in fact, I have a great quote from Mircea Eliade, who was one of the greatest commenters. He was like the Joseph Campbell before the Joseph Campbell. If people haven't heard of Mircea Eliade, they certainly need to. And in his wonderful books, he wrote this. He said, "The childish yogis can never find out their true natures. One has no need of tantra or mantra or of the images of the dharanis." These are the inner images that come in front of people when they're meditating. "All these are causes of confusion," he says. "In vain does one try to attain moksha." Moksha means going beyond good and evil.
Okay.
Transcending opposites. And we've just been talking about all the opposites. Well, the Indian word for going beyond opposites is moksha, a state in which you're beyond opposites. But he's saying, "In vain does one try to attain moksha by meditation. All are hypnotized by the system of these jhanas," these meditations. "But none cares to realize his own self." So he's saying that, you know, it's another distraction. It's another sit within your prison, but sit cross-legged and try to develop an inner world, you know, all this kind of thing. Jung said the same thing. "All of the yogic techniques invite one and all the same gesture, to do exactly the opposite of what human nature forces one to do." I really want people to meditate on that. Jung is saying that yogic techniques invite you to do exactly the opposite of what human nature forces you to do.
That's interesting.
But man will buy into that. Because as William Barrett said, as long as we remain in the womb of this externalized and public existence, meaning the roles, we are spared the terror and the dignity of becoming a self. So we are in the authentic world because we're running from selfhood. We don't want anything to do with selfhood. And therefore we'll buy into any other stimuli. So and these sorcerers, these puppeteers, puppet masters are very much dreaming up new stimuli because you are a person who's waiting for life to turn you on. And they're just willing to offer you those things that will turn you on. So you become mechanical, not a self, but an ego-based machine. This is what the problem is.
Striving for the oneness that we talked about.
Externally.
Know,
in some external way or in some sort of a lower ego way. The ego wants a certain kind of wholeness, because it's fragmented. But that's not the same thing as selfhood. That's just rebuilding what was broken, you know.
So what about Al Gore and the global warming cult? Another aspect
fashion
to all of this.
This is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. This, because I've always said that most things, you know, within the New Age movement is a fashion. You know, sort of, I remember in one previous show we were talking about what is not a fashion. Well, here we are knee deep in another fashion, which is highly an act of sorcery. What's going on with this Al Gore thing is a very, very skillful form of sorcery. You have the father figure, that's the head magician, the head Sauron up there, right? Waving his little, you know, wand and showing you how the earth is in terrible, terrible, you know, upheaval because of global warming. Something's heating up, you know. The world external to you is heating up. It's in terrible danger. this is offsetting what really needs to be done in this world right now, which is psychological change. People need to be doing what I'm talking about, which is looking at themselves, looking at their dark, so-called darker emotions, and realizing that there's a great angst within. And letting that angst teach them, not running away from their pain and their sorrow and their angst, not medicating out of existence, but letting it speak to them as a voice, you know, inviting it in, making friends with it. This is the true psychological development, so that they can gain a healthy inner dialogue. It's not the utter earth that's heating up, it's the inner world. You know, in my work on Pluto and the Holy Spirit, we are in a state now where we need to make vast inner transformations. You know, moving the bloody furniture on the Titanic isn't going to help. The source of all the external problems, be it global warming or other wars, are inside. If Wilhelm Reich was up on stage there, he'd be telling you that. Wouldn't be Al Gore. He'd be saying, Reich would be saying, listen, buddy, your psychology is out of whack. So the external world, and even the weather, because he was an expert on atomic things, you know, and how the world of matter.
Cloud busting and all of that.
He was an expert on exactly how matter mimics. Not right away, perhaps. It's an elaborate process. You know, I talk about it in my DVDs, the elaborate process of how the earth grid is involved in this, you see. Chi, what they is known as chi or ki or fohat, you know, in the east, prana. What we only know as energy, but there's earth energies, you see. So the process by which consciousness changes matter is an elaborate one, involving the dodecahedron, the earth grid, involving feng shui, geomancy. You know, we can't get into all of this right now, but there's an elaborate process in which the world is a bigger brain. Once upon a time, our unconscious mind and the world were connected, and it still is connected on a subconscious level. So man's toxicity, man's inner landscape, his inner climate, his inner republic is in total disarray. The storms of violence and the upheavals and the changes that are coming that a lot of people who don't know, haven't done their homework, believe are external in nature are actually internal. There's tidal waves and tsunamis within. In your emotional, moral, you know, landscape. So what do the sorcerers do? The last thing they want is for you to start taking responsibility over your inner landscape. They don't want you to have a self. They want to keep you out of directed and have no psychic immunity or psychic sovereignty. So what do they do? They do this perfect act of psychological inversion in which they project the external problem. And they get you all to rally forth, waving your placards and sitting there with these, you know, all ears to hear about the external problem.
And that might tie in with even the sense of gratification that you actually are, the sense that you're doing something, that you're, you know, fighting this, and that, again, gets you back in the comfort zone in a way.
And it's not you doing it, it's we are doing it. It's us. I don't have to do it. It's we. Look, I'm so secure with all these people. We're all facing front, you know. There's Al telling us all about it. We had no clue. You know, and we need Deepak Chopra, and we need, you know, we need Al Gore, and we need to get on this other bandwagon. There's a cult in the form. Yet they're going to tell you that some little, you know, weird voodoo cult down there is all evil. Down in the, you know, the dark places of the world, right? Or some little heavy metal black death metal cult is so evil, our kids are, you know, terribly indoctrinated, and look where they're all sitting. There they all are, you know, hypnotized by the great Magi who's telling you that global warming is coming and the earth is in danger and ecology and all these talismanic words. And we love it because that is another escape. We don't have to look at who we are. We don't have to look at the inner landscape. Thank you, Al, for giving us the perfect deafening, you know, mufflers or whatever you want to call them, the headphones, so we don't have to listen to these people who are telling us it's all inside. Deal with your psychology. No, 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 we want to deal with ecology. It's a question of meteorology, not psychology. Great, we're all for that.